Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's 5:30, and I'm doing a show, and I wasn't sure if I'd get one in today. But it's good to do it, and I did one last night at 6:30, so it's been a good weekend. I'm going to do a show tonight on love, and it's not going to be the show you would expect. I can guarantee it. I would like to remind you I have a novel on Amazon called A Deserted Place and a book of poetry called The Summit of Things. You can get either one, Deserted Place or The Summit of Things, on Amazon under my name or the name of the books, and my name is Keith Brabender, and this show is called Old and New. The title of the show is Love Conquers Hate, the Modern Mantra. And I have been listening a lot over the last years to the government speak and candidates speak and commentators speak, and I think what we have now in America, one could argue, is a new form of benevolent despotism. And one of the mantras of the benevolent despotism is the idea that what the government wants to do is to promote love. It wants us to love each other, and it promotes the idea that it loves us. But this is a very complicated concept in government and in psychology, so I would like to talk about it for a while. To define benevolent despotism, one of the first times I heard this term used was in relation to a very famous Frenchman who toured the United States in the 19th century, and that is Alexis de Tocqueville. And I've mentioned it before, but it's one of the common things that's talked about is he wrote about it. He's credited with bringing up the idea very early on that one of the failures of democracy is that people find out that they can vote things in for themselves, and when a candidate promises to do things for them, they are able to vote him or her in to do these things, and when that happens, eventually they give up their rights in order for them to free themselves from what was called anxiety. You know, you wake up in the morning and you're worried about your health care, so you have the government provide the health care to you, but then you're at their beck and call as to how your health care works because you're not giving it to yourself. They have to give it to you. And so there's this idea of by relieving your anxiety, you're actually losing your freedom because you're giving away your right to do something on an open market or to work or whatever it is in order for you to feel as if somebody is giving you something that you need and that it will somehow calm you down. You know, to live a free life in many ways is to live an anxiety-ridden life. There are things that one has to do for oneself, and they're not always easily accomplished. And if you don't accomplish them, you could be, to use a common phrase, you could be in trouble. If you don't have health care and you don't have enough income for housing and you're unable to buy a car or whatever this thing is you need to do, this is a great cause of anxiety. And what it's about is how do you relieve this anxiety politically? Take a look at what's going on with Bernie Sanders and the college students. The college students don't want to go deeply in debt to go to college. They have a man running for president who's told them that he wants to provide universal free college education. That is a way to relieve their anxiety. That it would be a tremendous way to tell an 18-year-old that you're not going to have this constant anxiety of worrying about a huge debt that is going to be put upon them if they want to get an education. This is a very simple example of how this idea of relieving anxiety works. But if they're going to tell you about love, and I was reminded of this morning when I heard a news broadcast very early on replaying something that Bernie Sanders is credited with saying yesterday when he was talking obviously about Donald Trump, and he was saying that all the great religions of the world, Buddhism and Muslims and Christians and Jews and everybody, one of the fundamental premises of that religion is that love conquers hate. And one of the things the left does is it accuses the Republican Party of being of having the politics of hate. So I'm going to get very much into this love-hate relationship that is being depicted between the two parties, within the parties themselves. And I think the first thing I want to get to is, what do you mean to say that you love somebody? And I don't want to get into some long discussion about what love means. I'm going to get into one fundamental aspect of it. One of the people I read a lot when I was young, and people probably don't read him anymore, was Sigmund Freud. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I believe or practice everything Sigmund Freud said, but I'm mentioning him because I remember he was one of the first people I ever read who said this, and I actually thought it had a very interesting idea behind it. Freud said that when you were told to love your neighbor and all these religious platitudes that are handed around, Freud, I believe it, I'm really sure he did, made the comment that you can't love everybody. That it's psychologically absurd to say that you can love the world. That love has to be specific. You love your wife, or you love your husband, or you love your kids, or love your grandma, or you love your girlfriend or your boyfriend or whomever you love. But the idea of loving everybody in the world is a very questionable, I believe, idea. And does everybody deserve your love? Well, you say love is supposed to be given in an undeserved way, but that isn't how government works necessarily. Government issues things to people on a variety of different bases, and it's not done because the government loves you necessarily. It's done in an entirely different way. What government does is it has a set of criteria that you're supposed to fulfill. If they run the banks and they give you loans, if you go to them and you're supposed to receive a benefit, it's done strictly by your age. If you're 65 years old and you walk into a government office and they say you're eligible for Social Security at the age of 65, it's not because they love you. It's because they set up a system whereby they wanted their citizens to receive a benefit at a particular time. But if you claim that they love you and they want you to love them back, this is a very complicated relationship. Because if the government claims it wants to love you in the sense that it's doing things for your benefit because they have this benevolent feeling towards you, my opinion is they're going to want the same in return. They're going to ask you to love them back. Now, this came up, and I've mentioned this before, in the post-World War II theories about government. When you went through the fascist state and the communist states between 1917 and 1945, and you had the brutality of World War II and the purges of Stalin and all the horrors and Hitler and killing everybody, there were political theorists who said that societies would no longer be ruled by force in the way that Hitler and Stalin had tried to run the world by literally arresting, torturing, and killing people. That what governments would do is they would use an entirely different strategy. And their strategy would be that they would go ahead and tell you that when they did something for you, it wasn't because they were being brutal or mean or forceful to you, it's because they cared about you. They wanted to do what was good for you, and this took on the role of the parent. The argument against the left from the right has always been that the left wing has taken on the sociological and psychological aspects of the parent. That they want to make you well, that they want to give you health care, that they want to send you to school, that they want to do the things that many people associated with their families and their parents in traditional society. And this goes across the board as to what they want to give you and what they want in return. And if you think about it, most parents, when they tell their children they love them, most parents would expect or think or assume or want the child to love them back. This would be a very common thing. And so if you have this idea in mind, then this if this relationship is transferred over to the government, they obviously would likely want the same. They would want to be loved back. And the question has to be asked, what is the government going to do to you if you don't love them back? When Bernie Sanders is preaching about love and what he and he's not alone in this. I said Nikki Haley the other day was talking about us hugging each other and we need to be and one of the you see this on TV all the time. We need to receive the children from South and Central America as loving people. We're and I've read many articles now on the internet by Christians, particularly Protestants, who have said that one of the aspects of the Republican Party that really aggravates them is the Republican Party preaches that they're evangelical and that they're Christian, but they're Christian in the judgmental way, and they're supposed to be Christian by demonstrating to people that they love them. In other words, apparently, Ted Cruz is supposed to run his political campaign as a Christian based on the idea that he loves us. This is being spoken about far more than in many ways than I think it should be. I don't ever remember in my childhood hearing the great politicians of the day telling us all about love. This was considered a rather personal matter, and it wasn't a matter of public policy. Now, one of the reasons that this has come up, however, is philosophical. I mentioned fascism and communism, but I think fascism is one of the most important examples of this. There are radical political theories in which the idea of compassion and love have nothing to do with the way in which the government is run. Instead, what you have is an internal idea of how love exists and what it means and what you do as a citizen. So to allow me to explain this in the only way I know how, because of my education, I'm going to go back to the man I mentioned before, and that is Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud made a comment that if you're religious, you never left the nursery. That there's a lot of, and if you use Freud just in a very general way, what he's saying is there's a lot of what he would call infantile or childlike behavior in the religious mind. And one of the ideas of that is talked about, and this isn't just Freud, a lot of different psychologists talk about this. When a child is really, really young, a child supposedly does not have a distinction or the capability of a distinction between himself and another person. A three-year-old kind of thinks of himself and his parent or his mother or his father as literally the same. This is talked about a lot in very many different philosophical and psychological works. If you go through the 19th century, through Kierkegaard and all the philosophers, they talk about this a great deal. And that when you become an adult, you form the ability to make a distinction between yourself and the other. This is talked about endlessly in psychological and philosophical realms. This is a fall into the consciousness that when one is an adult, one is responsible for the self, and one understands that there is a relationship between the self and the outside world, and that what you do affects what other people do, and what they do affects you. And there's a barrier, there's a gap. When you fall in love with someone, even when you're older, in many ways it's a return to the childhood. You have a unifying principle. You talk about two people getting married and they become one. They reunify. Now, why say all this? My argument is this is what the political world wants you to do as a citizen. They want you to join a group. And they want you to join their group. Bernie Sanders wants you to join his group. Ted Cruz wants you to join his group. And what they want you to do is to become one with their group. And when you do this, it has an aspect in it that's been talked about in psychology and philosophy for literally centuries, that this has an aspect of adolescence to it. It's a return to childhood. It's the idea that you are no longer an adult at that moment. You join your group in such a way that when you unify with it, everything is in the group, and the self and the group are not separate. You no longer separate yourself from the group. You and the group are one. And you hear people who go to Trump rallies talking in these kinds of terms, that they go see Donald Trump and there's all these people in the room and they're all unified together and there's all the signs, and when he speaks, there's this unity of purpose and they're all together. And this is what politicians tell us we should do when we bomb Syria and bomb Iraq and blow up Libya and do all these acts. We're all supposed to be together and unified. But one has to ask the question as to whether or not this is a dangerous state of mind to be in. Because when one does this and one loses the self, one starts to lose the ability to criticize the self and to see the self in a realistic way. One only sees oneself in relation to the group, and if the group is surviving or if the group is doing well, then one doesn't have a certain sense of the self at all. And in fact, you can argue that what the government is asking you to do is, in order to become a great citizen, you have to lose yourself entirely and become one with the group, so there is no self. It's almost a kind of religious paradox that's talked about in theology. If the self unites with the God in theology, you actually gain the self by not having one. It's a very weird idea in a sense, but it works really well in a description of what many politicians appear to want their citizens to do. Now, the problem is, once you become unified with your group, to say that you love everybody is impossible, because there is a general tendency, I believe, and it's almost necessary, so I say impossible, not to hate the other group that is not your group. Because they're not you. They're not unified in your group. And this, again, goes back to a kind of adolescent relationship to the other, to those who are outside of you. Because within your group, you're adolescent and you've become unified with everybody around you and you're one, but the people across the road who represent the other side are not in your group. So they're within their group, but they're not part of you. And anything that's not part of you and not part of your group has to be loathed. And in some societies and in some mentalities, the other has to be destroyed. The other is not permitted to exist, because the other is a disease and a conqueror of the group that you are in. And I'm telling you all of this because it seems to me that this is deeply, deeply anti-democratic. And the other thing I'm telling you is, it's becoming more and more common because we have divided ourselves endlessly in this country now into specific groups. You're either black or you're white or you're gay or you're straight or you're Christian or you're non-Christian, you're an atheist, you're a dualist, or you're a non-dualist. I mean, there's just, the categories are almost nonstop. And if you want to get into that kind of thing, you're in the group or you're out of the group. I had a guy come up to me the other day, I won't get into the circumstance, and asked me if I like sports. And I said, well, yeah, I like them. I'm not obsessed with them, but I like them well enough. And he looked at me with this odd look, and he goes, well, I don't like them at all. And all of a sudden, he was in his group, and I was in mine. In his world, a sports person is in one group, and he's in the other, and they're not together. And there's this complete discord between the two. They don't have no relationship to each other. Now, that's one really deep aspect of this, but I would like to get to another, and it's going to sound, again, kind of bizarre, but it's the concept of the sexual revolution of the 1960s. What does that have to do with love and hate? Well, it has a lot. One of the most fundamental aspects in America of sexual freedom, which somebody like Bernie Sanders on the left talk about a great deal, it has to do with birth control, abortion, the whole freedom of women, the freedom to do what you want, the right to not, quote-unquote, be oppressed by a sexually repressive government. One of the aspects of the sexual revolution was, you literally were told that there's nothing wrong with having sex with somebody you don't love. It was considered to be something that was very much a Christian way of life that many people rejected in the sexual revolution. And if you go to the people who go to a Bernie Sanders rally and you ask the average college student about it, most of them would probably believe that sexuality is far freer than claiming you have to get married and have kids and only love one person. But my point is, we now have a society which believes that many relationships within it, which used to be based on love, are no longer based on that, particularly in our own personal lives. It seems to me that in a very real way, we live in a society that believes less in love than it ever believed in before. But on the other hand, we're told endlessly by many people over and over again that it is love, that is only love, that will save us. This was very true even in the 2008 election of Barack Obama. I remember reading a commentary from a woman who was a really big Obama supporter when he was giving, and his wife was were giving speeches. And she said in her commentary on the internet, you know, a blog thing, that the Obamas represented the aspect of American politics where they showed how we that the government and the parents of the world and the women of the world loved their children and they loved people and we would save America through love. But if you read feminism and you read a lot of aspects of the modern sexual culture, it's not about love in any way, shape, or form. The relationships that people form have nothing to do with love. And the relationships that people promote have nothing to do with love. Sadomasochism is everywhere on the internet. Pornography of every sort, there's supposedly something like over 2 million porn sites now on the internet. If you think about the math, you would have to watch hundreds a day or something just to see every one of them once. This isn't about love. It's about entertainment. It's about a different pleasure principle in Freudian terms that we have adopted in the country. But somehow we're regulating love now outside of our own personal lives, and somehow we're relegating it to the government. And I think this is a very, very strange and odd idea to run a society. That it's not individual people that are required to love each other, it's the government that's required to love you, and you're required to love them. Am I really required to love Loretta Lynch or Barack Obama? Is that one of the requirements? I don't think so. But what we lose and don't have, and what used to be talked about in government for decades, is fear and respect. Why is this so deeply important? And this is the last topic I want to talk about. The reason that love was talked about a lot in psychology and philosophy was that when you base a relationship on love, what is the single greatest fear in theory that a child has when he loves his parents or loves his teacher or loves his friend next door? He's afraid of losing it. Once you have a relationship where two people or one person loves another, and the mother tells the child, just as an example, that she loves him, either be his grandmother or his grandfather or anybody, what the child is afraid of is they don't want to lose that love. It's nothing wrong with that. That's just the common reaction. When you receive love, you don't want to lose it. But if you have that relationship with the government, it means that you would be petrified or live in this oddball state of fear that somehow the government will stop loving you. And so you have to constantly reassert that love. You have to reassert that relationship. And so I guess if you want to have a sick example of it, if I am on Social Security and I make $14,000 a year in benefits and the government tells me they're only going to send me $13,800 for some reason, does that mean they love me less? Does that mean I've been rejected? And I'm not making fun of this. This is a very, very serious problem. Because if one wants to have a concept of the benevolent government that looks out for us, that has compassion for us, that wants to take care of us, that wants to do all these wonderful things for us, there is the distinct possibility that this kind of relationship with the government could exist and simply increase as time goes on. And in communist societies, it's well known, particularly in the Maoist society that was created in the 60s, that there was this constant emphasis on whether or not a member of the communist group you were in had betrayed the group and wasn't showing the affection for the leader that they were supposed to. If you see North Korea, for example, and that utterly whacked out moron they have running the country, with his bizarre shaved, half-shaved head and his baggy chin and everybody else is starving, you can supposedly be punished in the country if you go to a rally and you don't show enough love for him, if you don't applaud enough, or when his father died, you didn't cry enough. This is what these people want from you. They want your undying affection. You have to show your love for the leader. And you have to show your love for what they're doing. And don't think that when Hillary Clinton stands in front of an adoring crowd and she feels all this applause, that she really doesn't think that they love her. She doesn't think, well, they like me because I mail them a check. Or, you know, they really like what I did in Libya. And, you know, they think I'm a pretty good person. She thinks there's this deep and abiding affection that they have for her, as if somehow she's like a member of the family or some relative that they've known their whole lives. And it's because of the television, and it's because of the relationship that these politicians want to give you when they're on television, that you can have that kind of relationship within the media. Now, in brief here, I got about 3 minutes left. Where does the hate come in? I mentioned it's in for the other. And ultimately, I'm going to give you what I think is the ultimate scenario of the love question in government. And that is whether or not Bernie Sanders actually loves anybody, or anybody at a rally of his does, or anybody at a Ted Cruz rally does, or anybody at a Donald Trump rally does. They may say they do. But a distinct argument could be made that the person doesn't really love anybody else but themselves. That what this is really about is self-love. It's about a society which has created an entire generations of people now based on the fact that they're special, that there's something wonderful about them, that they're brighter and more magnificent than anybody's ever been before, that they're not hung up on all the terrible things that used to be, and that they can do what they want, and they're free, and they're cool, and they're smart. And it's all about them. If you go to the store, there's magazines called Self, and it's about the self. It's not about the other. It's about the self. And that what you really have here is an entire society which is pretending that there's an obsession with the group you join, but what you're really doing is you're joining an organization or following a leader or believing in something because it promotes your own self-love that you already have and you don't want to lose. The minute somebody tells you that you're not good enough to go to college, that you're not as good-looking as Taylor, that a woman isn't as good-looking as whoever is on the screen, that somehow you're not up to grade, that maybe you're not as brilliant as you thought you were, or that you're not going to end up as rich as you were, suddenly this self-love may not be what you think it's supposed to be, and there's a certain aspect to it that you don't like. But what you do is you have politicians now that promote the self-love. They promote the idea that we're the greatest nation in the world, we're the greatest people in the world, that you're going to go to college and you're going to be great and you're wonderful, and it's just you're being held back by all these terrible politicians that don't want to pay for your college and don't want to do all these things for you, and somehow they're degrading you, and they're denying you the truth of what you're supposed to have for the love that you have for yourself. If it is based on that, it will fail, and it will be seriously destructive to the society we live in. I'm out of time. I may have to talk about this again. Thank you very much. Have a great rest of the day. God bless. Bye.